This is Let's Make Mistakes, brought to you today by the wonderful folks at An Event Apart, a conference like no other in the world. I was terrified. So we were in DC. And the room was packed. It was huge, and there were these lights. I don't know if they were extra. I don't know if you guys turned them on just extra bright to terrify me further, or if they were just bright.
This is at An Event Apart.
Yeah, in DC. This was my first one.
And you're speaking.
And I'm speaking. And this was to me. This was the culmination of a bunch of stuff.
What stuff?
Like, I had a goal. I wanted to. I'd always been terrified of speaking in public, and I made it a goal to get over that. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to aim for An Event Apart because that's the big one. And at some point, I'll get to speak there, and I'll know that I've gotten over this fear. And there I was, and I was terrified. And that was my first Event Apart a couple years ago in DC.
You were terrified, and what happened? People threw tomatoes, you bombed, it was terrible. What happened?
I actually had no idea how I did until it was over. It was the whole thing just kind of happened in a fog. I went through the talk. At some point towards the end, I saw Toby, who runs the event. Mm-hmm. I saw Toby.
A lady named Toby.
Yes. Toby was running up the center aisle because I was apparently going over.
You were 5 minutes over, yeah.
And she comes running up the aisle, and she's making this stop talking motion. And I've got like one more slide to go. And I just like rushed through it. And I had to finish before she got to the front of the stage. And I honestly couldn't tell how I had done, because I had no history with reading that crowd. But so I get off the stage, and you met me, and you told me I did well.
Actually, I'm Jeffrey Zeldman, and I'm glad.
And Jeffrey's with us today.
I'm glad to be your guest today. I remember this very well. You were mostly reading out loud. You were riveting. Everyone was paying rapt attention to you. You seemed exactly at 60 minutes like you had summed it up and made your point, and it was brilliant, but you actually had a little more. You wanted to take it a little further, and you were sort of, you then started exhorting the crowd to be better and do better and say no to some bad stuff, and it became almost a religious invocation. And at that point, I realized you were going over, and I was like, wow. And I remember thinking this was perfect, and then thinking, okay, just like editorially, like I watch everyone who speaks. I sit in the front row. I watch everyone who speaks, and I file away. What can I tell them that might improve it by like 1% next time? And I was like, okay, I'm going to tell Mike he doesn't need to do that end bit. It already inspired everyone about their jobs. He doesn't need to then inspire them about their country or whatever it was that you were taking at that extra place. And when you came down, I hugged you.
You did.
I hugged you, and I said, you don't need those last 5 minutes. Those were the first words out of my mouth. And you said, okay, thanks, but I've just given my first AEA talk. I was scared shitless, and I have no idea how I did. Could you tell me that? And I was like, you were brilliant. And he's like, okay, thank you. And he's like, it was like, I was so eager to tell you how to improve that I forgot to tell, and I've never done that since, I forgot to tell you, you were great, this really works, you're terrific. Because the thing is, I'd had faith in you from the beginning. So I didn't realize how insecure you were, which is completely understandable and not abnormal or anything. But I didn't understand that you might be uncomfortable or afraid, because I was not. I knew from the moment I met you that you should be writing and speaking. And I told you that. Like, I told you that, like, years ago.
You did.
So to me, it was just like, yep, that's just what I thought. If I have one ability, it's when recognizing other people's talent and going, yeah, that person should be doing X, Y, and Z, or that person just needs a little push. And then
you
fly.
Did. You were my pusher.
I was your pusher, man.
So let's enough about me. Let's talk about AEA. Why in the world do you do this? It seems like a lot of work.
It is, you know. Okay, so I have to preface it by saying I used to envy – I remember when Jim Kudal was my first friend who switched from being a client services designer to being a product person. I mean, he's still both, but he was the first – I'd always thought about that, and I'd written about that in the 90s. It was sort of a dream, and Alista Part, in a way, was my product, but – people talked about it, and then 37 Signals made that change. So they're both from Chicago. And then other people started doing it. And I remember, and I know you've had a reaction to this too, people we won't name saying, yeah, client services is dead. Products are where it's at. You remember these kinds of conversations.
Right, yeah.
And the one kind of envy that I remember feeling at first, which was completely stupid and misguided, I believed that if you made a product, it was passive income. That after you did that first work of making the product, that somehow you had nobody to answer to. And as a guy who at the time was constantly hip deep in clients and constantly dealing with all the stress and anxiety and, whoops, I didn't communicate that right. They're disappointed. I've got to manage their disappointment, or they're excited, but they think we overpromised, but we didn't. All that. I just thought, wow, it's so much easier when you just make Basecamp and you're done. I'm like, no, of course, obviously you're never done. There is no passive income. 37 Signals has a million clients, basically. Everyone who uses Basecamp and sends an email, this isn't working for me, is a client. But I didn't realize that. And it's the same, conferences are a ton of work. I've talked to people in the design business, because a lot of designers are now starting conferences. It's sort of almost a thing, like it's almost like a bar mitzvah or something. It's like, it's just like, you have an agency and you don't have a conference? What's wrong with you? Right? There's a lot of people doing that. But they say, well, I'm doing this so that I won't have to worry about, income in the agency business can be very undependable. And we might have a bad quarter. We've got all this money that we know is going to come in. We've got all these clients who are going to pay us, but they haven't. We have all these jobs we're going to land, but we haven't yet. So we think a conference will round out the income. And I'm like, yeah, so you've got to come up with $300,000 cash to give a hotel. And then if two people buy tickets, you're out $300,000. So you've got to hustle and market that thing all year long. And it's like, and we do 9 shows a year now. So it's a ton of work. And every show is different, and we try to have the best speakers we can possibly find, but we're always bringing in new people who haven't spoken yet and helping them develop if we can. So yeah, it's a ton of work, and there is no passive income. But when Eric Meyer and I started this thing, you've told me the reason you started an agency was that you weren't happy at your agency where you were employed, and you thought, I could be a dick and just keep complaining about the boss, or I can see how I would do it. I can do it. That's how we felt with conferences. By the time we did our show, Eric and I had both probably been lecturing for 10 years at everywhere. Every show. And when you start that, you'll be like, a university will call you and say, we don't have any money, but we'll put you up in a Best Western overnight and you get to see Cleveland. And you'd be like, sure.
And the first thing that happens when you start your own thing is you immediately understand why the person that you'd been complaining about for years was so stressed out all the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had the good fortune. One of my favorite speaking gigs when I was coming up as a speaker was Web Design World, which at the time was owned by, Thunder Lizard, Thunder Lizard Productions.
Wow, we're going back.
Yeah, we're going back. Well, I go back. And Jim Hyde was the creative director of that conference, and he was the MC, and it was a multi-track conference. And he's also a presenter. This is a prolific author, and now he's Toby's husband. He's Toby Molina's husband, that's how life is. But at the time, he was running this conference, and I would watch a lot of speakers, because everyone's busy. There were speakers who would come and do their gig. They'd speak their hour, and then they'd go back to the hotel room to work on a project or meet with a client or whatever, and that's normal. Nothing wrong with that. But for whatever reason, I sat in the audience and watched the whole show. And I think I learned the way he arranged the playlist, the human playlist, like who went first, who went second, how one topic followed one another, how one kind of speaker would be sandwiched in between it, put an untried speaker in between two definite stronger speakers. I wasn't even conscious about it. It was like learning filmmaking without saying, oh, it's an overhead shot. You're just picking up the vocabulary. I picked up the vocabulary of how he arranged that stuff. And that was a really good education. And he was really good. And the people who owned that conference were very nice. And Toby was the producer. Toby Molina was the producer of that show. And that show went like clockwork. Nothing was ever late. Nothing was, I still speak at a lot of events, and you'll be at an event and you'll see a speaker has just come off stage, and the next one, they're demoing their equipment for the first time. They're trying their equipment for the first time, and you can see that the slide's not working. You can see that the technical people are worried. You can see that the speaker's trying to be cool, but they're anxious, and the whole audience sees this, and that never happens when Toby's involved. That never happened at Thunder Lizard. And that was another thing that I saw and thought was good.
Toby runs a tight ship.
She runs a brilliantly tight ship. I'm sorry she ran up and scared the hell out of you on your first talk. But yeah,
I've never gone over again.
The trains run on time. I don't go over. I don't run over. There's no... Toby and Marcy run a very tight ship, and I've learned a lot from them. Marcy Eversole is the... event planner. And I tend to say yes to everything, which is why I need people like Toby and Marcy in my life, right? Because I would probably say, hey, can I bring 100 friends and crash the show? Sure. Could we, whatever. I'm just sure. Could we, anyway, but I'm just back, just to back up a little bit. So there were things I learned about that show. There were other shows. There were events I loved going to, but I found multiple tracks frustrating.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
I'd be like, okay, do I see John Gruber or Jim Kudal? And then an hour later, I don't really want to see either. Or there'd be maybe 10 tracks. Like one of my favorite but also crazy making things was always South by Southwest. And I still love going out every year, right? And just it was spring. Your whole tribe was there, like every web designer whose blog you read or who you'd worked with or who you'd forgotten you worked. Everyone was there. It was amazing. And the hanging out was beautiful. Mm-hmm. But sometimes due to the nature of the thing, not to put it down, it is what it is. But due to the nature of the thing, there'd be like 10 tracks at once, of which five of which you really wanted to see. And then there might be 2 hours where there was nothing that you wanted to see. And you'd be like, I came all this way and I missed 4 talks I wanted to see. And now I'm just sitting here. And that's just the nature of a multi-track event. And it makes sense for what they do. I'm not putting them down. But Eric and I would always meet up once a year. We would have breakfast at Las Manitas. Do you remember that place?
I do. I love that place.
And we would say, we ought to do it. We ought to do a conference. Obviously nothing big like South by Southwest or like what Event Apart is now, just something small. But I would go and I would be at a place and I would see two people who I thought were wonderful. And then I'd, see someone giving terrible advice And I'd say, are they curating it? Are they totally immersed in this community, or are they just putting out a call for entries? I'm not talking about Southwest. I'm talking South by Southwest. I'm talking about any conference that I spoke at. It was like I speak at a university conference and give a talk about content, and the person who followed me contradicted me, but not in an interesting way, just in a way like, wow, everything they're saying is wrong and weird and like way out of date. And I feel bad that people paid money to come here and hear this. And I hope they don't think this is true. So I thought, you know, Eric and I were like, imagine if we vetted something, almost like good housekeeping. If we pick people, and originally we were going mostly with front-end developers and mostly with people we knew had made a huge contribution. So like Dave Shea did the CSS End Garden. Let's see if he would speak for us. You know what I mean? We got...
So what...
Yeah, go ahead.
What year was the first one?
Christmas 2005.
Do you remember your first lineup?
Oh, yeah. It was a one-day event, and the lineup consisted of Eric Meyer, me, and Jason Santa Maria, period. Jason gave one talk for 1 hour. Jason is one of the best speakers in the world now, I believe, in our field. But at his first talk, he was terrified, and he was reading aloud, and his hand was shaking, and it was crazy. And I'm sure I was that way too. I just, you know, I didn't get to go back in a time machine and see myself that way. And within a year or two, he was just, I mean, blowing me away. He was just not only as an appreciator, but also as a competitive speaker. Like he was doing much better than me. And I'd been going for years and years. And he was just much more focused, much more natural and engaging, much funnier. Anyway, Eric and I just wanted to put on the kind of conference we would want to attend.
Mm-hmm.
One track only, no distractions. Everybody's in the same room. And we wanted it to be about design and code and content because all that stuff's important. And we didn't want to do – and there's nothing wrong with a specialty show like – you know, if there's a jQuery event or a CSS3 event, that's awesome. People get to go there and focus on a particular skill set. That's great. But we wanted to do the opposite thing. We wanted to do a holistic event where people from different backgrounds, generalists who do it all, graphic designers, user interface designers, so-called, you know, front-end developers, everyone in the field would sit there and learn together and sort of hear from different disciplines. So you're a content strategist, but most of the show is not about content strategy. You're hearing from someone who's explaining the difficulties of designing for mobile.
So do you guys get together like every year and decide, okay, next year we have to include this topic?
Right. So we meet... We have staff meetings, Eric, Marcy, Toby, and I, and Steven, at least twice a year, usually more. So we'll be in San Francisco. We'll take an extra day in San Francisco and have an all-day meeting. Right now with Eric out because of his daughter's ill, Toby and I have been doing the content, and we talk all the time. On the phone, on Basecamp, on email. Here's this person. I just heard them. What do you think? Here's a video. Do we have a video of that person? We're constantly looking for voices we don't know about, looking to diversify our lineup, and seeking people. I will go speak at conferences sometimes just to hear the other people, just to find people. But we meet twice a year with the whole team to think about where are we going. I mean, we started as a one-day event that we would do in funky venues. So the first one was the Franklin Institute, which is a
Philadelphia.
Yeah, Ben Franklin Museum at Christmas time. A friend brought sound equipment. Like we brought our own PA into the room. There was no Wi-Fi. We had a tiny projector screen. I think 100 people attended. That was kind of cool. I have to look something up just for a second.
So the Franklin Institute, that was one of the, like, I grew up around the Franklin Institute.
Did
we used
you?
To go there all the time, yeah, with the big walk through heart. Yeah, that's one of my favorite places in Philadelphia. I had no idea that the first AEA was there.
And it was pretty amateurish. It was, Eric and I used to say, my dad built the sets and my mom made the costumes. It was really, come on, kids, let's put on a show like those old Mickey Rooney and
we can do it in the barn.
Judy Garland movies, which I've never actually seen, but everyone's heard that.
Sure.
The second one was at Turner Field in Atlanta. In attendance that day was a young Aaron Walter.
Wow.
Who would go on to be one of our most amazing speakers.
And he's a great writer, great speaker.
Great guy. Yeah. And but at the time, just attending. We had a local special guest who was Todd Dominey. And the lineup that day, and it was a one-day event. The lineup was two sessions from Eric Meyer on CSS, two sessions from me on web design and content, I guess. I don't remember my topics. One session from Jason Santa Maria and one session from special local hero Todd Dominey. Todd Dominey, you remember him, whatdoino.org. He was a brilliant web designer in the early 2000s. He still is. But in the early 2000s, he was kind of a prominent web design blogger. He was working at Turner Industries. Turner Broadcasting, mm-hmm. as their creative director, doing all their online stuff. And he was moonlighting on his own product. He was it was like the other person I knew that was like the first product person out the door, like way before the product boom that we're living in now. And he made a product, I'm blanking on the name only because I'm old and also because I don't use Flash that much. So it was a Flash-based product. It's HTML5 now, but it was then a Flash-based product for creating photo portfolio websites. So basically, he'd built a series of templates you'd upload photos to like a folder, and then Flash would grab them. And mm-hmm. It was a great product for photographers who knew some HTML or for web designers, like independent web designers who had photography clients. They could give their client an amazing, very powerful portfolio website that the client could easily update by basically dragging some files to a folder whenever they had new photographs to put in. And it was a product. And he eventually quit working at Turner Broadcasting, was able to support his whole family just with the product. So we had him come on and talk about that. And surprisingly, our attendees, mostly the ones because we did a survey after every show, we've always done that. A lot of them didn't understand. They were like, why is that guy talking? I wanted to learn about HTML or design, and I learned about this guy's product. They didn't see it as, here's your way out of the trenches. Here's someone who, like you, came into a client services job every day. But if you're thinking about getting out of that, here's how he did that.
So they thought he was pitching.
They thought he was pitching the product. He totally wasn't. He's the most soft-spoken, gentle, nice guy. I mean, gentle is a good word to me. And, you know, he's a strong, sure. a strong guy, but he's a gentle guy. And, you know, and Southern and you know, good manners, quiet, lovely guy. But nobody – so – And several other times when we've put Jason Fried, say, on the stage, people have thought, oh, he's pitching a product, and he wasn't. So we have learned who our audience is and what they – and even though it's constantly changing, I love now. So, I mean, we grew from, like, this one track day. I got to finish with Turner. Like, we stayed in a cheap hotel. We took a cab to the field on the day of the show. Me, Jason, and Eric, each carrying two boxes. We were ahead of a rainstorm. It's just starting to rain, and we were running across the parking lot of Turner Field looking for an entrance door that was badly marked. And, like, I was going, like, I'm too old for this shit. Like, carrying this box of shit. We get up there. People are already starting to wander into the thing. We're not set up yet. there was a guy who was supposed to do Wi-Fi for us. He never got it working, but he kept telling us every hour that it was going to work, and he was sweating. So there was this guy, and I'd be like, Eric might be giving a lecture, and I'd go over to the guy, and I'd go like, Eduardo, is this, what can I tell these people? Because I would see already, like, the attendees were doing this weird, with their thumb and finger, like, checking for email every 5 seconds.
Right.
Like, I'd come out and go, hi, folks, sorry about the Wi-Fi, but we hear it's going to be working in the next few minutes. And these people are all, like, compulsively ADD, checking their email while watching the presentation. And it was a great place probably to have a bachelor party. It was a terrible place for a conference. There were pillars in the middle of the line of sight. You could either see the speaker or the screen, not both. It was just awful. So we did a couple more. The next one was in Austin at the, what do you call it? The Drink House Movie Theater. What's that called?
The Alamo. The Alamo, Alamo Draft House. Yeah.
Which is probably
great place.
A great place to watch an old movie, eat a hot dog, and drink beer. It seemed like a fun place to have a web design conference. And probably by now they've upgraded their facilities, but like, they promised us Wi-Fi. They didn't have it. They did have a wired connection just for our presenter, but it didn't run from their office to the stage. So they kept sending people out to like buy cable extenders. And finally, it was like 2 feet short. Like after they bought every cable in Austin, one of the most tech-savvy towns in America, they bought like every spare cable in Austin, and they brought them all to the thing, and it And they still couldn't get it. And the problem was, this is how long ago this was, we were all doing web-based talks. I'm talking about web design. I'm using the web. Like we were doing live demos and we were linking to live websites, or we were using something Eric Meyer had designed and given away to the whole community called, oh, I forget what it was called, but it was a CSS layout engine that would enable you to make slides. Wow, what was that called? Do you remember this thing?
I don't.
It was before Keynote. Basically, a few years later, Apple came out with Keynote, and we all switched to it. It just made sense. But up until that point, for years, I've been going, I'm giving a talk about the web. I demand access to the web. Free, unfettered access to the web. It's my birthright. And, you know,
anyway. That's playing with fire.
And it always screwed up. And I would, you know, so I would eventually have like all these HTML files on my hard drive just in case. And like, you used to be able to like grab a website and download it to your hard drive. Anyway, so that was a long time ago. We started working with Marcy on the Alamo Draft House. She negotiated some stuff for us because initially we were thinking small and cheap and like, well, here's this person, Marcy, who's done millions of conferences. Let's pay her a couple of bucks to help us make sure the snacks work at the Alamo Draft House or whatever it was, or negotiate for us or something. After a little while, we realized what an incredible resource this person was who had 20 years experience doing this stuff and loved it and was passionate about it and ate, you know, gets up in the morning thinking about her work and goes to sleep at night thinking about her work and loves it. And so we basically brought her and Toby in and began doing professional shows. At first, they were 2 days. We, you know, still single track. We started doing them in hotels. We stopped Eric and me speaking so much and started bringing in newer speakers, better speakers, more speakers. And then eventually, you know, again at another meeting, what can we do next? How can we keep improving this product? How can we keep responding to what people are telling us? Now we're at a 3-day thing. And it's right now it's like there's an optional workshop day or an optional a day apart, we call it, because it's not a traditional workshop. But we're probably moving away from that into a pure 3-day format next year.
So what made you guys decide, okay, we got a thing here. This is going to work. We should take it on the road. We should do it more than, you know, we should have like a schedule to it. This is real.
It was always real. It was always the plan that it would go from city to city. Initially, the thinking was Eric Meyer, Jason Santa Maria, Jeffrey Zeldman, and a special guest go from city to city. And like, it was almost like we were a traveling regional conference. Like, your city didn't have a Refresh Columbus, so we would be that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And it wasn't like we didn't do it as a marketing plan. It wasn't like we sat down as business people or figured out how to make money or anything. It's like we really loved the community we were part of. We'd been doing it at that time for like more than 10 years, and we wanted to just keep that going. How it got so big and turned into a real thing, Marcy has a lot to do with that, booking us in hotels. There were several years where Eric and I would like, well, we don't sleep together, so he would be in his house and I'd be in mine. But I'd wake up at 3 a.m. thinking I had just bought a home and thinking I was going to lose it because a conference venue needed a $200,000 advance. We didn't have that in the bank. We would sell tickets, but maybe, you know, you float stuff. So the tickets right. that you've already sold for Chicago are going to book a space in Atlanta. But if nobody buys tickets to Atlanta, you're going to have to make that money up.
Right.
So there were, and it's not like we never have those fears. We still, you know, the beginning of this year was a little shaky. It really wasn't, but it looked that way for a little while. Eric is kind of a, well, you know Eric, he's kind of a genius, and he is. He loves to project. He's constantly mapping sales data and like overlaying one, you know, here's how we did with Boston last year. Now I'm worried because people are buying more slowly. It's like eventually it's just a different curve. There's actually just a different buying curve this year from mm-hmm. city to city because of, I don't know what, because of Obamacare kicking in, because of the Russians. I don't know. Something's going on. It's a butterfly effect. Somewhere, something's changed. Some big thing that's happening in the economy, the same as the client services business, is different now.
And Greg Hoy wrote a wonderful piece about this about a week ago about what's going on in client services right now. It's, you know, we're in a cycle. We're in a down cycle. And I imagine that it's hitting every part of the industry.
And so it makes sense that in the same way that studios and agencies and freelancers are having a harder time getting clients to sign on the line, and clients are downsizing their budgets and everything else, it made sense that at the beginning of the year also, we were like, wow, we just went up to 9 shows. We just decided to do a spectacular one-off 3-day blowout ridiculous show in Orlando at Disney World. If we legally could call it an event apart Disney, we would. You know, it's Disney, so you can't really. You can do it on their space with their permission and do stuff with them, but you still can't call it Disney. That makes sense. But we were just like, we decided this is going to be over the top, and we have these 9 events. And then, of course, the economy changes, and Eric has this sudden tragedy in his family to deal with. And so it's been an interesting year because there's like a lot more work to do. Marketing, making sure people know about the events, making sure people are coming. But it's interesting too. There are some people who come like year after year. We're actually starting a program for them, like a frequent flyer program.
Oh, great.
This is pretty cool. And then there are people who come who've never heard of us. When we started, right, when we were in Philadelphia, Dean Clean. From
Dean Sabatino from the Dead Milkmen.
He was in the audience. He was in the audience of our first Event Apart show in Philly because he's a Philly web designer. As still being in the Dead Milkmen.
Yeah, I knew Dean going back to the early Dead Milkmen days.
You were probably like in high school around the same time and probably part of the same scene.
Yeah, and I went to school with his sister. That's how I met him.
So he beat you up?
No, I didn't. We were friends.
Just
Dean's a great guy.
He's a great guy.
And you know, then years later, he emerges as a web designer. And at this point, I'm a web designer, so it's like, wow, that was pretty cool.
You could, if you haven't already, you could certainly do a whole show on all the musicians and ex-musicians and ex-punk rock people who are now web designers. I don't know if with the newest generation that's true, but I know like over 35, like there's a whole lot of people who were in music for a while and ended up in web design, and it kind of makes sense because it's
in a strange way,
it's kind of the same thing.
It is the same thing. The aesthetic is exactly the same.
DIY
aesthetic. I don't need anybody to publish my music but me. I can play anywhere I want. I don't need anybody to publish this story but me. I can put it on the web by myself. It's the exact same aesthetic.
That's, in fact, so much so that like my early stuff that I designed was like deliberately ugly, like super ugly, because it was just coming out of that same mentality. Everything looked like kind of a grungy club flyer. That's how I designed. And the ugliness of what you could do on the web suited me just fine back then. Also, I didn't have that much skill. It was a combination of like refined taste in a certain ugly, you know, refined ugly channel taste, like sophisticated thinking and terrible skills, which is punk rock.
We just needed three chords. That's all.
Yeah. Paragraph, index, and H1.
Yep. Images. Please. So I'm really excited about the Disney show. Are we allowed to call it the Disney show?
We can right now. It's okay. It's an event apart special edition Orlando, or an event apart Orlando colon special edition.
But it is in Disney World, right?
It's in Disney World. It's in the, it's in the futuristic hotel. Tomorrowland, the contemporary hotel.
I think that was the quickest yes I ever gave you.
Yeah.
Because I love Disneyland, and I've never been to Disney World, so.
Disney World is in Florida.
Right.
It's bigger. I went to Disneyland as a kid in the 70s, and that was amazing. And I love it. We're going to Disneyland. This summer, I'm taking my daughter to Disneyland so we can try that because she's kind of done with Florida. But that's another – sorry. Sorry, Florida people. I don't – she's just like – we've been going there for 3 years, and she's like – anyway, she's
– Done with that.
She's it's more political. It's weird. She's nine. She's nine going on 14. But
sure.
But it's wonderful there. And this is a place. I mean, if you really want to study client services, go to Disney World. They're like, and if you want to study brand, go to Disney World. Our first day at Disney World, like years, when she was six. We had just checked into the hotel. It was the one that's like an old plantation or an old Edwardian hotel. It's the Grand Floridian in California. Mm-hmm. It's the Grand Californian.
Yeah.
It's the fussiest, most old person-y one. So, yeah. So we chose it.
How did this happen?
Well, I just want to finish this little point about Disney. We had just gotten an ice cream at the snack bar. We hadn't even gone into the Magic Kingdom yet. We're still at the hotel. It's a super hot day. My daughter bites into her ice cream bar. The ice cream falls off the stick, melts because it's a hot day. She starts to cry, six-year-old crying at Disney World. A maid who was making up the bed comes out of that bed of some other room, comes out of that bedroom, says, "Oh, don't cry, honey. Let's go get you another ice cream." She takes us into the snack thing. She hands an ice cream to Ava, and she is getting it comped, but that's going to take some paperwork and administrative stuff. She says, "You go. You don't have to see this." A maid. Think about any that's hotel awesome. You've been at. Maids are afraid. They live in fear that they're not going to make enough rooms up in time. Mm-hmm. They live on tips and everything. At Disney World, a maid's first job isn't to make a bed or clean a bathroom. It's to make sure that there are no children crying because it's the happiest place in the world. So that's brand. That's empowering your employees to fulfill this brand promise, and that's amazing to me. And we, you know, Marcy's been saying, "I want to do Disney. I want to do Disney," for years. And Eric's favorite place in the world is Disney World. And it was just like, yeah, of course, let's. Right. And that we were able to get into the Contemporary Hotel is the one, it looks like the Jetsons.
Mm-hmm.
And the monorail goes through the hotel.
Yep.
That might be awful. I don't know. We'll find out. but it seems really cool. It's a fantasy about a futuristic world where, you know, where public transportation, quiet, efficient public transportation, goes right into your home and comes right out and takes you where you want to go.
I'm hoping that I can hop off the monorail right onto the stage to start my talk.
That's not going to work out, but that would be ideal.
I could even do a little song and dance as I hop off the monorail.
We're going to do stuff with the mouse ears. I don't know what else we're going to do. We're definitely going to do some crazy Disney stuff because I think I might wear the three-fingered gloves. I don't know.
I will I'll come on as Daffy Duck with, you know, just a shirt, no pants.
I'll be the back end of Pluto.
Okay.
If you want to do that costume.
No, this will be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm excited. It's crazy. It's totally crazy. And we're going to do stuff at night and go to the, and you'll be able to go to Disney World and then learn about user experience. I mean, like, that's pretty great. That's mm-hmm. pretty great. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I'm excited about all our shows, to tell you the truth. I'm going to Boston Saturday, which we love to death. It's not much of a college town, but
I think they might have one college in Boston.
That's my favorite, like, throwaway joke in this is Spinal Tap. Remember their gig in Boston gets canceled, and their manager, Ian, who's always
says Ian.
He says, "It's not much of a college town."
Yeah. And after that, you go to San Diego.
Yes. We have never gone directly into Los Angeles. It's difficult, but so we're always sort of going around Los Angeles, which I think Angelenos don't mind. People that live in that area don't mind going to. I can't help thinking of Anchorman, though. I know that's like really shallow of me, but every time I go to San Diego and it's so beautiful and you're walking along the pier and everything, I just see my favorite jokes from Anchorman.
Maybe we could set something up where the speakers from one conference meet the speakers from another conference in a park and have a fight like on Anchorman.
That would be ideal. Did you see Anchorman 2? Because they really took the fight to the next level.
I did.
I was pleased with that. That's a weird movie. I saw it the first time and thought, it's okay, not that funny. I saw it the second time, I was like, this is brilliant.
So which other conference would you most like to fight?
You mean like San Diego versus Boston?
No, like an event apart versus...
Right. Oh, like an event apart versus Smashing Conference or something?
Yeah, there you go.
I think maybe IXDA, because we could take those guys.
Or
UX Week. We could take those guys.
We could totally take those guys. Who would you want? Who would you want on the AEA team for the fighting?
Well, I think Jeff Veen in Viking gear would be good.
That would be good.
He's just, you know.
He's a little thin, though.
He is thin now. He needs to, like, bulk up, but he could revert to ancestral type. Sometimes I look at Veen and think, like, your ancestor so killed my ancestor. Like, I can't even imagine, maybe they didn't even notice my ancestor. My ancestor was scurrying under the hooves of his horse as he was, like, riding by, raping Europe or whatever. It's just like...
God.
No, but because the guy's like 7 feet tall. He's a Viking. He's descended from Vikings. And my people are like, we hide in closets.
I don't think the Dutch were Vikings.
Oh, he's Dutch?
He's Dutch.
Why did I think Scandinavian?
No, he's a little windmill boy.
He's not a little windmill boy. But okay, so who would we have on our team?
The Dutch were the finger in the dike people.
I'm letting that go. Mike Essel. We haven't had Mike Essel speak, but we should probably have him speak only so he could like bring a bat.
Right. Like he would be good in a fight.
He would be good in a fight. I think he'd be good in a fight.
Well, I fight dirty.
Yeah, that's okay. Everyone does.
Yeah.
Sarah Parmenter.
I could see that.
She's scary.
Scrappy.
Ethan Marcotte. He's a beast. He's a beast.
And he's really been bulking up. Have you noticed?
He's been bulking up, and I think all those 20 years of being a humble, nice guy, he's got to let it out in a flood of sudden rage and aggression.
Right, against Smashing Conference.
Against Smashing Conf.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Tough. This is really tough. Oh, yeah. Jarrett Spool. Jarrett Spool would trick them.
He would. Plus, he would have props.
He would have props. I don't know. We have this, like...
I think you got to get Toby.
I don't like listing people because I'm always going to leave someone out who's amazing, and there's like a million.
You got to get Toby in there.
You know what? I would just leave it to Marcy and Toby, and the rest of us could stay away from the fight, and they would handle it.
Right.
Those ladies are tough.
I bet, awesome. I'd awesome. Like to see them in a bar brawl, actually.
But that's a different thing.
Yeah.
I actually have a video of that. But you have to speak at least 10 times before you get to see that.
Damn. Well, it's one more thing off my bucket list if I do.
Yep. So what's your impression of the show now that you've done it a few times?
My impression. So
what's it like to listen to it, and what's it like to prepare for it and all that? Are you sick of it?
No, not at all. In fact, I think the last one I did, the last one in Seattle, I went in there kind of, not in my best state of mind. And by the time I was done, it was like a How Stella Got Her Groove Back moment.
That was like amazing. The talk you're giving this year is amazing. And it's,
thank you.
It's not for everyone. I'm sure there will be people who feel affronted by your message or challenged.
That's okay.
It is okay. There will be definitely everyone listening to it should feel challenged by it because it's a really powerful thing that you're saying. It's really an empowering message. It's just that it's in the form of a challenge. Or as you say at the beginning, I'm going to make you feel bad, but then I'm going to make you feel good, so it's okay. And I think that is it. We have right now, so much of the world is digital and virtual. So much of what people are focused on and what matters is being created, on the web and on the internet. And we have the power to create that stuff. And
yep.
We're kind of cultural gatekeepers. We're the people who can protect privacy or not.
Yep. It's on us.
Yeah, it's on us. So it's a How Designers Destroy the World, the talk you're giving again. In San Diego.
Yep.
It's a great talk.
And thank you. And the
only thing that makes me sad is that someone has to follow you. Well, in San Diego, you close the day, which is great because really it's very hard for anyone to go on after that.
That's my first closing.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Are you going to drop the mic again?
I don't know. Was that bad?
No, it was awesome.
Okay.
I forget where you did that. That might have been Chicago.
No, that was San Francisco.
That was San Francisco. I just felt like I'd seen Martin Luther nailing stuff to the door of the Catholic Church. I just felt like you came in like this enraged preacher. And like I just went with it, and it was amazing. But
so Toby and I had we talked about having a mic around. We first talked about it in Austin, and she said, not the expensive one, please, but she brought in a cheap handheld mic, and she said, if you're feeling it, pick it up and I'll turn it on. And I wasn't ready in Austin. I wasn't feeling it. And that was a different talk too. So I don't think that was so San Francisco last year, it was the last talk of the year, and I thought, well, what the hell, let's do the mic thing, let's see if it works. And then I got some feedback because we got our feedback things.
What clients don't know and why it's your fault.
No, not in San Francisco.
Oh, was that how Designers Destroyed the World?
That, yeah.
Okay. That's right, because you were talking about Facebook in the land of Facebook. And you were criticizing a design decision that had been made at Facebook and going into kind of excruciating detail about its effect on someone's life.
Yeah.
Like a life-changing event because of a design decision. That's where you started. And you were starting right in the hometown of Facebook. So, well, not the hometown, but the adopted hometown, the new home of Facebook. And I'm sure like 20 people from Facebook were there. Which was
hopefully.
Cool. Which, yeah. So, which is fine. The first couple years of MFA interaction design students I taught at SVA, a lot of them went to Facebook, Twitter, and Foursquare. So I feel like I have it's great. They didn't learn anything from me, but the stuff they learned in that education that they got, it's like you can see it and you can see those products changing.
Yeah, they're not going – I mean, Facebook's not going away. So we might as well get good people in there.
Yes, absolutely. And not that the people who were there were bad. See how careful I am?
Very good.
Like, I talk about something. I loved South by Southwest. I loved it. It was my favorite thing in the year. Like, that was my Christmas. That was just the best thing. Who knows? Next year I may be ready to go back and experience the different thing. I'm sort of staying away mainly because it's changed, and I'm not necessarily looking for the thing it's changed into.
Well, it's changed and we've changed.
That's true too.
I don't want to go to a week-long party anymore.
See, I've been sober for 21 years, so it was never that kind of party for me. I always, to me it was, meeting Sean Inman and Leslie Jensen Inman, like, for the first time, and sitting at some table near where somebody was hawking something, right? And just like having a quiet conversation and making new friends. That was the party that I liked. It was never about the huge party, blowout parties. The biggest party I think I ever went to was my party 2 years ago, and that was like 300 people, which is not big. Maybe it was less than that.
Is that the Kagiyoki party?
Kagiyoki was the biggest thing I ever went to. Sorry. Kagiyoki was like like 500 people more. It was huge. It was crazy. That was the best.
It was fun. Anyway, we got to wrap up.
We do.
But it's been a great show. I enjoyed finding out more about AEA and its history. I think our listeners will too.
I think it was like the best show.
It was a podcast apart.
Ooh, you mean an internet radio show apart?
Yes. And I'm going to see you very soon in San Diego.
I will see you in San Diego in a few weeks. It's going to be awesome. Thank you for everything. Have a great day.
You too, Jeffrey. Thanks so much for coming on our show.
Pleasure.
And for our listeners out there, if you are ever in a city that has, or close to a city that's hosting an event apart, please do your damnedest to get in there and get to it. You will learn so much. Even if you think you already know all that stuff, you don't. You are going to pick up so much stuff. You are going, if nothing else, you are going to rekindle your passion for what you do. And it is totally a mind-blowing event. You will leave there changed. I guarantee that. And if you sign up for AEA now and use the offer code AEAMULE, you'll get a $75 discount off the 2 or 3 day events for the rest of the year. So please take advantage of that. It's totally worth it. You're going to learn a lot. You'll get to meet Jeffrey. And if nothing else, that's worth $1 million right there.
We'll dance at the party too.
We will dance at the party. We've danced at the party. So, Jeffrey, thank you once again for being on the show. To our beloved listeners, thank you for listening to us.
Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Mike.
And we will see you all next week. See you.